বাসাটি গৌরা ভক্ত বৃন্দা হরি কৃষ্ণ কৃষ্ণ কৃষ্ণ
হরে কৃষ্ণ
As per the very auspicious tradition of Sri Sri Radha Giridhari Mandir, we will be reading from the biography of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, entitled Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, which has been so illustriously compiled and written by His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Goswami Maharaj. In February of 1956, while the U.S. was struggling with civil rights, while Khrushchev and Eisenhower were both openly deploring the arms race and were maneuvering in nuclear disarmament talks, and while the Shah of Iran was visiting New Delhi, Abhay was trying to print Back to Godhead. In winter's discomfort, he walked through the early morning streets of Delhi to visit Surendra Kumar Jain, the printer, to read the latest proofs. By walking, he saved money. Only when he was delivering paper from the paper dealer to the printer would he rent a rickshaw. He had no chadar, only a lightweight cotton jacket, and he wore rubber shoes. He also wore a cotton hat that covered his ears and tied beneath his chin, protecting him from the 40-degree wintry mornings and the sometimes gusty winds. Kumar Jain. My first impression was that he was a nice person and straightforward. I felt pity also because of the conditions under which he would come. I know he didn't have even 25 paisa. He would come all the way on foot and without any breakfast or anything. He would come in the morning to the press, and when I would ask him, Swamiji, did you have anything to eat this morning? He would say, oh no, Mr. Jain, I just came because I had to see the proofs. That's all right, I would say. I will get breakfast for you. I would call for breakfast, and then he would sit and work. He would do the proofreading himself. The printing was done by me, and most of the time he would like to be present when that final printing was being done. He would come in the morning around 7 and stay until he had seen all the proofs. It was a regular thing that he would come without breakfast. I would arrange for breakfast, and he would sit across the table from one another for hours together. He was always talking on religious subjects only. But when we would be sitting, especially when waiting for the proofs to come, we would discuss many things. I felt that he knew quite a lot, because he was a well-read person. He was more a friend than just a person coming to get things printed. He was a very simple man, straightforward in his habits, but his mission at that time was particularly to further the movement of Back to Godhead. His financial condition was very, very weak. Sometimes the printing would be difficult because he was not able to arrange for the paper. Many times I told him that if he was feeling difficulty, why was he continuing? But he said, "No, it is my mission, and I will always carry it on as far as possible." I tried to accommodate him to the maximum possible extent, but he was a real pauper. I only did the printing, and he had to arrange for the paper, so sometimes it was delayed. Although my job was printing, sometimes I would say, "All right, you are so keen, I will give you the paper." But usually he would arrange for it himself. Since we only did printing, he would bring it in a rickshaw. We were not uncomfortable together, but as business would have it, if the bills were standing for a long time, then I would ask him if he could do something about it. He would say, "Don't worry, you can be sure that your money is coming." I never asked him where his funds were coming from, because I felt that it was his personal matter. But it was embarrassing for him when he could not pay, so I never tried to embarrass him. He was concerned that if he didn't have money, how could he print the paper? And he definitely wanted to run that paper. He wanted to preach the teachings of the Gita. He thought of it as a sort of movement, that it was the only way that people in the world could find peace. His conviction was very strong. We are reading from February of 1956. It's very illuminating how Srila Satsvarupa Maharaj is describing the situation of the world at the time when Srila Prabhupada was struggling to perform his service of printing Back to Godhead. It was a time of tremendous social unrest. America was the most powerful and influential country in the world, and it was having severe internal problems. It was the time of civil rights, where minority groups like the black African people, who had for many, many generations been kept as slaves by the white Europeans who had come to America to settle there. You know the story, of course. At that time, America, especially in the southern states, was basically agricultural. And to do all the work, the hard, tedious work, wealthy people would go to Africa, and they would bring the African black people and put them on huge boats, overcrowded, terrible condition. They would bring them to America as their own property, and they would literally sell them. If a person had a strong body, it would be a high price. If a person didn't have a very strong body, it would be a lesser price. Women would be sold, men would be sold, and the people had no independence. They couldn't go anywhere. Until they were sold, they were just kept like in a prison, in a camp where they were not allowed to leave. They would just eat what they were fed. And then they were sold, and if you were bought by a nice person, you would have a relatively nice life. But most people were very cruel, because these were slaves, literally. No rights. The country gave slaves no rights. Their only right was they had to obey the master. Even if a person left their master, you could be arrested by the government, because you weren't allowed to be in the country unless you are serving your master. So this was a very difficult era that lasted, I believe, for a couple hundred years. That these slaves, they would be forced to work throughout the day. Oftentimes they were beaten and whipped by their masters, punished if they didn't do enough work. They were told who to marry, who to have children with. They had no freedom whatsoever. So this is a very terrible situation. And this happened up until actually the Civil War, which took place, I believe, in the 1860s. The main purpose of the Civil War was to abolish slavery. Because the southern states, they wanted to continue this slavery. That these black people, they are my property, I can do anything I want to them. I can beat them, I can torture them, I can anything. I can work them as much as I want. They have no rights whatsoever. Not even citizens, only slaves. And sometimes people would trade their slaves. I have this person you can use, you have that person I could use, and they would trade. Just like people trade horses or oxen. They had no more rights, less rights, than the oxen has in India today. They couldn't. Oxen can walk around the streets. They could not walk around the streets. They couldn't leave the property of their master. It was terribly cruel. So due to years and years, generations of misuse, and gradually the population of these slaves was growing and growing and growing. Actually, generally, the slaves were not even allowed to marry. If the slave master wanted them to have children, just like a bull and cows, they would just say, you have sex with this woman, you have sex with this woman, you have sex with this man, because you're both strong, we'll get good, strong children to be the next generation of slaves. There was no marriage, practically speaking. So sometimes we think, oh, America's the land of the free. It's the land of the free if you're from a particular color skin, a particular race, a particular religion. If you're not, it's not, in those days especially. Of course, we're supposed to be wanting to be like the slaves for Krishna. So if it's properly placed, this slavery, it's very good. But when some cruel man who just wants to exploit you and abuse you for their own sense gratification, utterly hellish life. So after the Civil War, the northern states defeated the southern states. Abraham Lincoln was the president at the time, and he was completely against this slavery. He considered all men are created equal, and any American is a citizen, and they all have equal rights, man, woman, children. And the Southern said, if you touch our slaves, we will destroy you. They are our property. We treat them as I like. So ultimately, that and other reasons as well, it became a war. The entire United States was cut in half. The Southern states was called the Confederates. The Northern states was called the Union. And they had a massive war. more people were killed in that war than practically any other war in the history of the United States. Millions and millions and millions of people were killed in that battle. The most terrible war. Because sometimes a family, the brother would be living in the southern states, the other brother would be living in the northern states. And because they accepted the ideology of their particular location, brothers were fighting against each other. Sometimes brother, sons and fathers were killing each other on the battlefield. Friends, relatives, cousins, best friends. This was a common thing. They would be on the battlefield and they would be face to face with guns with their best friends, and one or the other had to kill the other. So it was a terrible war. And for the first large section, the southern states were winning. But ultimately, there's actually the most historic places in America, relatively, are the battlefields of the Civil War. All over America, there's famous battlefields. Gettysburg, Bull's Run, and pilgrims, not pilgrims, but tourists, they come to see these battlefields. Because this is where hundreds and thousands of Americans killed each other. Hare Krishna. But ultimately, the Civil War was won by the Union, and slavery was abolished, and it was considered that you have to release all slaves, otherwise you will be arrested by the federal government. But it was very difficult to actually execute the law, because people had big plantations or huge acres of land, and they just paid their... What they had to do is they had to start to pay their slaves something. When they were slaves, you didn't have to pay them one paisa. They just worked. You sometimes beat them, whip them, had sex with them, anything. It doesn't matter. They have to obey whatever you do say by law. And afterward, and all you give them is you give them whatever food you want. You give them whatever place to stay, whatever poverty area you want. Some of the masters were very nice. They really treated their slaves like human beings and made them very happy and prosperous. But most just treated them like animals. So after the Civil War, some of the slaves got to get paid something, but they didn't know how to survive or live in this country outside of slavery. So gradually what happened, because the South was so prejudiced against the blacks and treated like animals, so many started coming to the cities of the North, places like Chicago, from Mississippi and Alabama. And then what happened is, basically, although the laws were good, the people of America still gave no rights to the black people. Even as late as the 1960s, in many states, even in the blacks were not allowed to go to school with the white people because they were considered contaminated. In public washrooms, a black man was never, ever allowed to go into the washroom or drink water from the tap that a white man used. This is even during my teenage years. It was like this in many places, especially in the South. So what happened is the blacks, they had a huge populations of tens of millions of people by then. They had civil rights leaders. That means they wanted freedom. They wanted equal rights. And they started marching and they started having riots and so many things. And many of the politicians, some of the local politicians, wanted to bring things back to slavery even in the 1950s. Or at least keep them as people with no rights. But the President of the United States, Eisenhower and others, they were pushing, they should have freedom. So there was so much turmoil, so much violence in the cities. black killings white, whites killing blacks. It's still like that in every city of America. Still, to this day, if a white man goes into a black neighborhood at night, 99% you'll be beaten, robbed, or killed, even today. And what to speak of the 1950s, when they didn't even have proper laws to give them rights yet. They just had basic laws. So the country was being torn apart. It was a fever of so much violence and so much anxiety and so much conflict within the nation. And besides that, Russia was at their peak of communist power. And the Soviet premier, Nikita Khrushchev, he was just building nuclear bombs like anything. And America was building nuclear bombs like anything. It was the worst arms race the world has ever seen. Hydrogen bomb, atom bombs, nuclear bombs just being created more and more, all pointed toward every city of America and Russia, with all sorts of various technology being created. And the whole world was fearful there could be a war, a nuclear war, any day. When I was a little boy in the 1950s, and even in the 60s, it was such a fear that these bombs at any moment are going to start exploding and destroy civilization. That even in my neighborhood, which was just in a village, a small town where I was brought up, anybody who had a lot of money, they would invest it in bomb shelter. It was a very... No, I'm not. You're laughing. You don't know what bomb shelter is here. People had it in their backyards, right behind their house, very costly. It was a big business building bomb shelters. They just dig deep, deep, deep down into the ground, underground. Then they put all kinds of thick concrete all around and make a little room or a little house underground with all sorts of ventilation systems with filters to get air down there. And then hundreds of days of stored food, canned food that will just last for so many years, and different water devices stored. In this way, people were thinking any day the bombs will drop. And Russia was threatening to drop those bombs, and America was threatening to drop those bombs. There was total fear and tension amongst these two nations, what to speak of the poor people, making these arrangements to live like rats under the ground. So I'm sorry to get so much into this, but it's very important to understand how Srila Prabhupada was dealing with these world crises. And then, because the people were in so much fear, and the politicians were in so much unbelievable fear of each other due to these bombs, and the Americans and the Russians were the worst enemies. The American people were brainwashed and conditioned to hate Russians. And communism was like the dirtiest word you could use. If you didn't like someone, you would just say, he's a communist. And that person would be ruined for life socially. There was one big, big politician in the government named McCarthy, and he was on a campaign to destroy communism influence in America. And he went on this campaign, and big, big movie actors, if he would investigate and they had any slight connection to a communist, he would just go on a campaign against them. Their career was totally ruined. If a politician was found to have any connection with communism, their career was ruined. If a businessman was to have any connection with communism, even if he didn't, if someone just accused them of doing it, no one would go shop in their business. They would be out of business, finished. They were just hunting after communists. Nobody even knew what a communist was. But it was just the word that caught communism, bombs, slavery. People thought that Russians, they were like human bears. They just, communism. Nobody even thought that they were human beings. That's the way we were trained. Seriously, everybody. And there was all these little underground communist parties, and the government, the FBI, was hunting for them to destroy them. So there was so much tension. There was so much fear of a war. It was called the Cold War. That Eisenhower and Khrushchev started having talks to reduce their building of nuclear bombs. That was what practically all the money of both nations were going to keep up with each other. Something like India and Pakistan, but much worse. Because these were big countries, very successful, and they really knew how to do it. India and Pakistan are pretty amateur compared to amateur neophytes when it comes to bomb building compared to America and Russia in the 50s and 60s. And they were the two most powerful nations in the world. One time Khrushchev was at a meeting in, I think, the UN or something, and he was so angry with the Americans, he took off his shoe and started beating it against the table in front of all the politicians. It was on television. He was going, "Rah, rah, rah, rah." He's still famous for that. Beating the table with his shoe. Just took off his shoe. There's pictures of that, photos. Have you seen? Very famous. Don't search for it. It's not there. So while the whole world was so intense, civil rights, imminent war, nuclear bombs being escalated, Prabhupada understood. This is the situation. Why? Why are the Americans and the Russians fighting like cats and dogs? Why are the blacks and whites fighting like cats and dogs? It's all due to the bodily concept of life. You're thinking, I'm a black man from Africa, and you made me a slave, and I'm going to beat you down if I see you on the street, because you're white. And you represent slavery for us, torture and killing. My grandfathers, they died in the fields of starvation. They were beat to death by your white brothers, by your white forefathers, and if I see you, I will kill you, I will beat you. And the whites thinking, blacks, they are low class, they are uncivilized, they are aborigines, we must keep them down, no rights, let them be in poverty, keep them away from our children, keep them away from our existence, send them back to Africa. If they won't be slaves, they should go back home. But they've been there for 10, 20 generations. Hare Krishna, this is the situation. What is this black and white? And the Russians are thinking, Americans are destroying the world. They're just greedy, power hungry, money hungry demons. That's the way they were brainwashed to think in their schools. Little children hate the Americans. They are the enemies. And we were taught in our school, hate the Russians. They are communists. They're uncivilized, terrible beasts that are trying to conquer our good nation and make us into beasts. Hate them. That's the way the children were being taught. That's the way the adults were being programmed. That was the world in the 1950s and 60s as well. Prabhupada understood. It's not a battle between the blacks and the whites and the Americans and the Russians. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani kavihastini suni chaiva supake cha pandita samadarshanaha. Prabhupada was such a humble sage. He saw that the soul in everyone's heart is the same. The bodily designations are very, very unimportant. Of course, in India, you have your caste distinctions. You have your scheduled castes, and you have your other castes, and so many rights, and so many no rights, and so much conflict. But in the Western countries, these types of distinctions were creating civil wars of nations, millions killed in bloodshed, and imminent nuclear disaster to the whole world. So Prabhupada, this was his understanding, his realization we should understand. Jeff, it is not the civil rights conferences to try to bring freedom to the blacks. These are not the solutions to any of the problems. The real solution is we must understand that we are not these bodies. Every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. Every living being should be respected because they are the children of God. To see through this bodily conception of life filled with all variegated designations, and understand what is the soul, the jivatma. That is truth. Therefore, while the whole world was trying to make their solutions of bomb shelters and peace talks and racial riots and violent ways of trying to get freedom, all over America, racial riots, some were doing it peacefully, some were doing it violently. The Shah of Iran was in Delhi making all sorts of deals and arrangements with the government for his nation, which was basically a fundamentalist Islamic nation, and he was trying to create freedom and world trade in that country. There was so much resistance, all due to bodily conceptions of life. Therefore, during this situation, what was Srila Prabhupada doing? He was printing Back to Godhead. Because he knew that the knowledge of this magazine is the only means by which the world can be saved from its ultimate disasters. So we see how determined he was. We're reading how Surendra Kumar Jain, the printer, is describing Prabhupada's situation. Please, with your hearts open, understand what Srila Prabhupada was doing and why. He had no money. He was a businessman in pharmaceutical trade. And at times he was quite successful. But he understood that he could not really do the will of his spiritual master as long as he was bound by all these commitments. For decades, he responsibly took care of his family by maintaining his businesses very nicely and preaching Krishna consciousness, helping his guru and helping his godbrothers. He was a first-class grihastha in every exemplary way. But at a certain point in his life, he understood what is happening to the world. It's an emergency. This knowledge of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the only hope for the world today. So therefore, with that idea, he left his business. He took vanaprast. He was old enough to do so, according to the proper traditions of Varnashram Dharma. And he left his family for the higher cause of the world, humanity, all living beings. Srila Prabhupada then had nothing but the burning desire to make Back to Godhead available to everyone. In India, why did he choose the English language to print Back to Godhead? Why? Because he had the vision of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That this magazine is meant for the salvation of the world. Not just as an entertainment for some pious Hindus. It is the hope for the planet. And it must be distributed everywhere. So it was his compassion, his utter dedication to the welfare of humanity in service of Guru and Gauranga that Srila Prabhupada performed these austerities. So much trouble, and he was alone, and there was not even anyone in the planet who even appreciated what he was doing. His God brothers didn't concern themselves with back to Godhead. They had their own mops, they had their own preaching missions, and Abhai, what is this? He has a few paisas, not even that. He's trying to print a magazine, nobody even took him seriously. What to speak of the rest of the world? He was getting no encouragement, no appreciation, nothing. And yet he was going on. And how he was going on? This is not a devotee glorifying his spiritual master in these wonderful passages. This is a businessman who's not even a devotee, just telling us what he objectively saw in Prabhupada's life. You might think devotees, because he's the guru, they might be saying things just because that's what they like to believe. But this is a person who's telling what he saw. Factually, Srila Prabhupada was very old. He said he didn't even have 25 paisa. He didn't even have money to eat. And he didn't even care about eating. When it came close, Prabhupada had no employees. Today, our Back to Godhead magazine, we have people in America, people in India, people all over the place. Some are doing typesetting, some are doing editing, some are doing proofreading, some are doing writing of the articles, some are doing the typesetting and printing. Prabhupada did everything all by himself with no one to help him. And he didn't even have the money to do it. Just to buy the paper. To us, oh, what's the big deal buying paper? But to Srila Prabhupada, he had nothing and he would have to go into massive debt every month just to somehow or other get that paper for the printing. Besides writing the articles, proofreading the articles, laying out the whole magazine, he had to go out and beg for the paper. Prabhupada was such a destitute, poverty-stricken condition. He didn't even have a charter. He would come hungry every day because whatever money he had, he wouldn't even use it for food. He would use it for paper to distribute the message of Lord Chaitanya in the world. What kind of a person is this? This is a person who is endowed with the supreme compassion of Krishna himself. Empowered. Struggling alone. The name of this chapter is Crying Alone in the Wilderness. And still, nobody helped him. Whole Gaudiya Math, not even one paisa would they give him. He was alone. Surendra Jain is describing he would have to feed Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada wanted that magazine to come on time, but sometimes he had no funds and no means of getting any funds. He would have to be like a beggar, asking this businessman to help him to get this money on time. Sometimes Surendra Jain would arrange the paper himself. You have to pay me back. This is business. Prabhupada was such an honest and straightforward and pious person. He would definitely want to make all his payments on time. He did not want to cause anyone the slightest bit of anxiety. But sometimes it was simply impossible. He had nothing and nowhere to get it. And to ask such a noble, pious, aristocratic, compassionate saint, you're overdue for your payments. It was embarrassing to Prabhupada to have to not be able to do what he was supposed to do of repay. And Surendra Jain was so embarrassed, but he had to ask him, you're overdue again, month after month, you owe me this money. Prabhupada said, I will get it, I will get it. Just wait, it's coming. He had such faith, and he would always repay. He took nothing for himself. He was such a simple man. Surendra Jain did not see Srila Prabhupada as a client, as a customer. He saw him as a friend, because Srila Prabhupada treated him like a friend. He treated everyone in a very personal way as a friend. He was crying alone in the wilderness. He was struggling. Why would anyone go through all this? It makes no common sense at all by material standards. If you're doing it and you have God brothers, God sisters, family members saying, very nice, you are doing good service. His family members, they were very upset that he left. His God brothers and God sisters, they didn't give him the slightest bit of credit for anything because they thought he should just be working in our mutt and doing service for us. What is he doing independent? Nobody! No encouragement! No money! So much work! Old man, he would walk to the printer every day. He wouldn't spend a paisa for food, he wouldn't spend a paisa for his breakfast, or even for his transportation. He would walk a long distance there, a long distance back, just to save the money for paper. So much inconvenience. Why? Do you know anyone like this today? Because he understood what's happening in America, civil rights. Battle, violence, hatred between different color people. Building of wars, potentially destroying a great quantity of the planet due to different races, the Russians and the Americans. Here in India, in every nation, Srila Prabhupada saw so many terrible, disastrous consequences that can come due to ignorance. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada had burning desire. My life, let me live every moment of it in compassion for the human society that is suffering so terrible in this world of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada took the order of his spiritual master as his life and soul. On their first meeting at Ultadanga Junction Road, at the first Gaudiya Math temple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati told Abhay Charan, the only problem in this world is lack of Krishna consciousness. The only solution to this problem is Krishna consciousness. The newspapers, magazines, radios, televisions were filled with nothing but problems and imminent disasters in this world. And everyone was running around crazy trying to figure out how to solve the problem for my family, how to solve the problem for our nation, our culture. In the 1920s in America, there was a depression. The whole stock market crashed and the whole nation was in total poverty practically. It was common that people were jumping off from the top of buildings and jumping from bridges onto roadsides and in rivers to commit suicide because they had no money to survive with their families. It was terrible. That's the richest nation in the world. And everyone's making their solutions on so many levels. And Prabhupada saw, it is all ignorance. It is all delusion. Therefore, this Back to Godhead magazine must be printed. He didn't have any book distributors in those days, except himself. After he printed it, he would go out to the tea stalls and the roadsides, and with his own hands he would be convincing people, take this magazine, give some donation, please. You need to do it. And please try to understand, while Srila Prabhupada, that unknown beggar in the crowded streets of Delhi, he did not stand out from practically any other beggar from the social vision. And while he was out there just going to one person after another, trying to give them this little magazine Back to Godhead, in his heart, he was convinced what his mission was, that this is the start of circulating this magazine by the millions all over the world, giving knowledge in a world of ignorance, giving light in a place of darkness. He had that faith. Sometimes it was so disastrous that at times Back to Godhead couldn't even be printed. It was impossible for him due to social conditions, economic conditions of the nation, of himself. But yet, Srila Prabhupada was always determined, Dhritavrata, to revive it. People must be given the opportunity to be Krishna conscious. So this is so beautifully being illustrated by Srila Satsarupa Maharaj in this wonderful paragraph, Srila Prabhupada's glory. What the situation was in the world and how he was single-handedly dealing with the real solution. And by his mercy, by his tremendous sacrifice, we are reading about 1956. He didn't start the Hare Krishna movement in America till 1966. That means for the 10 years that we are talking about, all those 10 years, he was in utter poverty. When he was in Vrindavan, he just had a little room. He would go to Delhi to print Back to Godhead. When he came to America, he was in the Bowery, the Lower East Side. He struggled like this for 10 years with no help, with no funding, nothing, until a few young American men decided, let me help. And then gradually, little by little by little. Have you been to the Lower East Side of New York, 26 Second Avenue? Tiny little place in a very run-down, poor neighborhood. Same was the Second Temple in San Francisco, Frederick Street in the Haight-Ashbury District. The average Americans thought that district was so poor that it wasn't even fit for human habitation. It was only a place for hippies, Hare Krishna, who were used to living in any condition of life. That's where he started his first temples. Even in America, the first Back to Godheads, there wasn't even a printer. They would just use a ditto machine and just crank it with a handle like, and it would only be a few pages, and someone would just go, be going, mimeograph, it's called. You had to take each letter, little rubber letter, and slide it into a bar, And you had to make the whole magazine like that. And then you go put ink on the letters and go, put ink. In America, that's how he was printing back to Godhead. What type of determination did Srila Prabhupada have? What type of sacrifice? For decades. Not just 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. For decades he lived like this. Out of compassion. As the most illustrious embodiment of the mercy of Guru and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it was due to that that we have all been given Krishna consciousness. There would have been no hope in our lives of receiving this transcendental mercy if Srila Prabhupada did not go through what he went through. And therefore it is very important for us to understand the life of Srila Prabhupada so that we can actually be grateful to him. And after he did all this for us, with tears in his eyes, choked up voice, he only asked one thing in return. I have given my life to serve the mission of my Guru Maharaj. I have developed this ISKCON International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Please, I'm an old man. There's not much I can do and there's not much longer I can live. Please help me in serving the mission of my Guru Maharaj. If we can understand what Srila Prabhupada has done, what he went through for you and me, individually and personally for you and me, then we feel a debt. And the more we feel a debt to Srila Prabhupada, the more we will be dear to Krishna. The more we feel indebted to Srila Prabhupada, the more we will make spiritual advancement by getting the mercy of Krishna. That proportion should be very carefully understood. We should be grateful. And Krishna arranged Srila Prabhupada to show this most rare, incredible, supernatural form of total, total dedication in the spirit of compassion to glorify his devotee. He never gave up. We are so easy to give up if something doesn't go right. We have our service. I'm not getting the reciprocation I desire. Let me give up and do something else. It's not giving me happiness to do this anymore. Prabhupada never gave up. Why? Because if Prabhupada gave up, there would be no hope for the world. That's why. Prabhupada didn't consider, I'm doing anything. But he knew the hope for the world is Krishna. The teachings of the Gita. The mercy of the Yugavatar, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, is the only real hope for the age of Kali. This quarrel and hypocrisy going on such massive levels throughout the world. This is the hope. Therefore, back to Godhead must go on. Even though it was such a small beginning, so small it would have discouraged anyone to give up. But Srila Prabhupada had faith. He told us the story of the sparrow who wanted to dry up the ocean with her little beak. What hope was there for a sparrow to dry up the ocean? What hope was there for a poverty-stricken person who had not even 25 paisa or proper clothes? Walking through the crowded winter streets of Delhi just to get a little begging for paper. What is the hope of such a person starting an international society to spread love of God all over the world? About the same as the sparrow to dry up the ocean. But Prabhupada had that faith. As Garuda helped the sparrow,
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and my Guru Maharaj will help me. I just have to go on because the world needs this nectar of Harikatha.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you very much. We will end here. Hare Krishna.